Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok for another edition of Star Wars Ranked. Me and a guest ranking Star Wars, and today's going to be a great one. But before we get to that, I want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download on us. That's right. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/Force Center and get an audiobook on us. We always like to recommend something. We had one on the main show this week, but you know what? Have you tried my book, Why We Love Star Wars? It is on there. You can check it out and try it out on Force Center, which helps the brand all around. So go to audibletrial.com/Force Center for more information. I can't wait to get to this episode, and well, it's here. This guest is making his debut on the Force Center podcast feed, and well, if Force Center is a cult, he is a recent convert to our way of looking at Star Wars. Please welcome, from Screen Junkies, you might know him as Billy Biz Billy Patterson.
Oh, thanks, Ken. I've been binge listening to Force Center, and it's changed the way that I've looked at Star Wars, just in general. So I'm happy to talk about a controversial part of Star Wars.
Well, you requested this, and we're going to get to the show here, and we're calling this the... I always kind of change the titles as I go along there, but this one is going to be the best things of the special editions. Now, that's something that's been talked about all over the internet. You can find a lot of videos. You can find what you hate about them. And we've talked about that here in Force Center. Jedi Rock's not going to be on my list. Spoiler alert. But there's absolutely a lot of things we love about them. But beyond just some of the scenes and individual little things which are in this list, we also have some bigger concepts that Billy's going to share. And all that comes together because, Billy, you are kind of a special edition generation fan.
Yeah, it's so funny because, anytime that they talk about, oh, Star Wars is coming back to Blu-ray or new issues, it's like, I'm not buying if it's not the originals. I hear you. I get it.
Feel
as you. Someone that has a degree in film, the historical, I want those originals too. Yeah. But I hear you. Hear me. That's the Star Wars you grew up with. This is the Star Wars I grew up with. It's like when you're young, you would tape a movie on TV and then there's commercial breaks. But when you buy the real VHS and you watch it, you're like, wait a second, there's supposed to be a break here. That's how I feel when the Jabba scene's not there. I'm like, wait a second. Where's Jabba the Hutt?
Where's Hutt?
Yeah.
Where's Boba Fett staring at the camera like, I'm here. Yeah, that's what I love about this. And our way of looking at it here at Force Center is celebrating all things and trying to find what we love within those things and having fun with the things we don't love, which we could easily do, things we hate about the special editions or prequels, all that kind of stuff. And sometimes it's fun to dive into, but this is definitely a positive look at these things. And it's actually pretty easy to find things to be positive about in the special editions. But you personally, though... I've known you for a few years now. It's funny, we never really... I think we may have crossed paths when I was doing some Wizard World stuff and you were working over there.
Sure.
But then you come over to Screen Junkies, first as a TV Fights contestant, and then you took my job. No,
and you handed me your job.
Handed you the job. In that time, I'm not going to call you a negative fan at all, but you do have, hot takes is your thing.
Sure.
And sometimes you can get tear into something, or other times you're kind of like, my hot take is I really love this.
Right.
And with Star Wars, you've gone on a little bit of a journey with Rogue One, and you and I have done two broadcasts about Rogue One. Yeah. One we had to redo, but... And after listening to some Force Center stuff, you told me your view of Rogue One has changed.
Yeah, I kind of almost feel like an imposter. I really thought, do I pull that episode down? Because now it feels disingenuous. Oh. After we did our episode, and I was like, here's what I don't like about Rogue One. Just listening to you and Joseph and Jennifer and talking about, like, maybe there's always going to be things you don't like, but if you watch it just with your arms folded, waiting for those moments, that's what's going to happen. So I watched it again afterwards and I thought, release the negative thoughts, follow what they're showing me. And it felt like I saw it for the first time. Like, I felt the pain of Cassian Andor. I'm like, what a sad guy. What a sad story. I want to know more about Cassie. I don't know why. I couldn't tell you. The Force was flowing through me. I really enjoy Rogue One.
Which is awesome because you use the phrase that I always joke about and use, and it was the special edition commercial. See it again for the first time. And that really got all of us. I mean, we were going to go to the theater in there at that time. I really love that. I love that, and that's a testament to what Joseph and Jennifer brought to me as a Star Wars fan, and then we all kind of put down on audio tracks here. So welcome to the Force
Center. Thank you. I'm very excited. I can't wait to talk Star Wars.
I'm
too pumped.
With a positive bent. Let's set up the context. All right. So for me, 97 special editions, some rumors I'd been in film school, film courses, I should say, preparing to go to film school till radio took me away from it. And all the buzz was Star Wars might be coming back, the Power of the Force figures in 95 return, and then I have some magazines I've even read here on this network of, like, the rumors of the new things, and also this pops up, and it was like, what? George is redoing this? So for me, it was, I was in, 21 range, bought tickets with my friends, and we went to festival cinemas in Rio Grande at 10 a.m., and we were very conscious adults seeing something again for the first time. You, a few years younger, lucky, take me to where, how, and when, and why, and all the things about you seeing the special editions.
I'll try to make this as tight and succinct as possible.
You don't have to.
Then I'm going to ramble for the next 3 hours. 1996, I remember vividly. It was Matthew Nishina's birthday party.
Oh, Matthew.
Sleepover. Yeah. They put on A New Hope. Was on, yeah. And it was, I remember walking into the room and it was the droids in the desert and Tatooine. I was like, this is boring. I don't like it. Boo. Cut the cake.
Boo his.
Fast forward a year later, yeah. I'm 10 years old. The perfect age for Star Wars is 10 years old.
Okay.
I feel like that's George would be like, you are my target.
Yeah, absolutely.
10 years old. The special editions are coming out. It's President's Day weekend. Yeah. And on the news, there are lines around the block for this movie, Star Wars. I was like, that movie that I was like, really? And I remember Friday night, it was on the news. Saturday night, on the news.
Yeah.
And I started to get a weird sense of FOMO. I was like, I got to see this, even though I know I don't like it, but there's lines around the block. Took me to the theater.
It's got desert robots. I don't want to see desert robots.
I was like, maybe I saw the wrong thing or whatever. Yeah. And every story you've heard of your favorite creator saying like, yeah, when the Star Destroyer comes over Tatooine, yeah. I was hooked. 20 years later, it did the same thing to me.
Yeah.
And my President's Day weekend, 1997, February, it changed my life.
Yeah.
It's, I know it sounds corny and overdramatic, but I was like, 20 years later, this thing is like, wow.
Yeah. You know? Which is, it's crazy also to think, 97, only 20 years. At the time, I remember thinking, wow, 2 decades ago. Now it's like, that's like last week for us. Yeah. It's like, oh, The Matrix is 49 years old this week. it's a great experience. And I've mentioned before here, my old Jedi Alliance co-host, Maude Garrett, that was her first experience seeing it, special editions. And that is one of the reasons we might be discussing of why it's so good. And you walked out of the first one. What was like your first... We were like, I've seen the light and must collect robot toys. Like,
so like I said, it was, you know, February.
Yeah.
And my grandma bought me, it was because all the Star Wars toys were now starting to sell out really fast. She bought me, it was like Han Solo wearing a vest he never wore in the movies. It was like orange and had this huge jet pack that he never wore. Yeah. And a Luke Skywalker who was buffer than, you know, The Rock is now. And he had like a desert skiff and a Darth Vader. And it was like those three toys were now always, that's to me is Star Wars because that's where it started. And,
awesome.
The next day, like literally the next day I was like, I want Star Wars bedsheets. I want Star Wars everything. And I was like, wait a second. Yeah. There's two more movies coming,
was the best part of the trailer in the theater. Cause again, even I trying to remember when I actually was like, this is really happening. And it might've been in the theater seeing a trailer because even though it had movie news magazines and everything, it wasn't as pre-internet. I think my friend had Prodigy. You could sign up in and get some information, but I love the trailer because it was like, see it again for the first time. And then it was like, and then on March 11th.
Right.
And then again on March 20th, you're like, oh, there's like a conversation that the trailer was having.
It was like the little TV playing and then the X-Wing just bursts through it. And you're like, whoa.
I forget the exact
wordage. It was like for over a generation.
This is the way many have seen Star Wars.
It's a great trailer. Just in marketing in general, like look it up on YouTube. It's a great trailer.
See it again for the first time. So we're going to do that here. We are going to take a look, a Force Center look, a Star Wars ranked look at the best things in the special editions. Me and Billy have 5 things. We might toss in some honorable mentions along the way. We go 5-1. You all know the drill. It's simple. Get it. Good. Billy, we are here with your number 5.
Yeah, so my number 5, even just looking around where we're recording, there's a ton of iconic Star Wars art. You know that poster.
Yeah.
But for me, the special edition posters, the Drew Struzan posters are Star Wars. That is that is the art for A New Hope. Anything else, it's like, that's cool, a B international teaser, whatever. This is the art. And when you look at those 3 posters and then you look at what they did for the prequels and you put all 6 of them together, like I said, it creates this visual tapestry of the saga of the Skywalkers, like a quilt or a mural, you know?
Yeah. No, no, keep going. You got the form here.
No, I'll cut in a bit. Look,
I'll have this dance later, sir.
It drives me crazy that Luke, it's the wrong Luke and Vader on the Return of the Jedi poster, but who cares? Whatever. I just think, like, you know, Drew Struzan is just such a legend, and so everything good that he touches, it's like the John Williams thing where it's just that becomes iconic, but it's like the color palette, the kind of like pink, purple, orange of A New Hope, and that kind of icy blue purple of Empire, but then like the greens and the blues in Return of the Jedi, like that to me is, I have those posters at home. It's my iPad wallpaper. Like, that is Star Wars art.
It's a great point and a great way to kick off our list, because that's what we're looking more than just the movies, which is a lot of what we do here at Force Center, just looking at the big picture. And the art is great. It's so mid-90s for me, and I mean that in a good way, and also just, wow, you got a Seinfeld shirt on as we're recording. Like, you look back now, and I'm like, that was modern times when I lived it, but none of those clothes are modern.
Sure.
It's so weird, but yeah, I look back at the Star Wars poster from that time. And in a way, I won't use the word eclipsed because that might ruffle some feathers, but I know what you mean, where that I see that more. That's probably what George wants people to believe. But I have here one of the original Star Wars posters, Alan Ladd Jr. signature on it, by the way.
Oh, wow.
And this is, the classic buff shirt ripped open Luke, sexy Leia on his leg, and the two droids, R2 and 3PO, kind of looking like they do in the movie, the shadow of Vader. I mean, that's classic, and that's Star Wars. But I got to tell you, I think in my mind, I see the font of the special edition posters more than I see anything in this poster. So that's a great starting point.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, tying into the prequels, I love the idea, you know, back in one of my old apartments where I didn't have to share anything and I had full jurisdiction over what up in the walls, I had all six of those posters, and it just creates, like I said, like, you almost don't even need to know the story and you can follow it just looking at all six, going like, I see the progression of this little boy to the end of the Return of the Jedi poster, and every, like, it ebbs, it flows in the most beautiful, poetic Star Wars way, you know?
I want that on my wall now. Yeah, no, that's great. It does. And that's what it should do. And that's why I think we have such high expectations for all Star Wars posters and cover art now.
Absolutely.
And it might go to that, not to take anything away from the classic ones, which are great as well.
Not.
Empire might be my favorite, the classic Empire, the 1980 version. But that's a great place to start. That's why it's number five on your list. We go to my number five, and I'm going into the movie with Biggs Darklighter. That's right. I try to put myself back into my own mind in 1997, and this was one of the things that got me really excited, because I was one of those fans who had read the novel, the Alan Dean Foster ghost-written novel, and had known there was more, and then the pictures emerged, because I used to check out this book in the library, and it had Biggs with the cape and the jacket on Tatooine and everything, and very aware of who this character was and very aware that there was more out there. And there's a lot of other things that we knew as Star Wars fans at the time that were out there. And some of them got into the movie, much to our later chagrin. Looking at you, Jabba, no disrespect to your love of that scene. But I'm like, where's the Scottish guy going, "Han, my boy"? And now I got a cartoon. Different conversation, different podcast. But Biggs pops up. He didn't come up in the beginning of the movie, but he pops up. And he and Luke have a moment, and it really adds to just the character, the look of Luke later. It feels like a loss, and it's more than just this thing. And it was one of those, I walked out, and that was one of the conversations wanted to have with a lot of friends at the time. Only my friend Joel really was a Star Wars fan, my friend Casey too, but of the people I saw it with that day, they were kind of like, "Cool, what's for lunch?" And I'm like, "Biggs, did you guys see Biggs?" And there, of course, the other scene that was originally there, I believe, and they've taken it out, is Garvin Dave Drace, Red Leader, going, "Skywalker, well, I knew your father." Like, no, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Promise you didn't. You didn't.
But they kept the big stuff in there, and I loved it so much. It was just fun to have that added wrinkle in.
Yeah, and you also get a sense of how they vet their pilots. You know how to fly this thing?
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're in. The recruiting process is very simple for the Rebellion.
To anyone who questions some of the other Star Wars characters in the sequel trilogy and their magical abilities, this was absolutely employment.
But it's great. I love that addition. And that's another one where, you know, I mentioned earlier where it's like, hey, where's that thing? You know, you go back and I had watched the originals, non-special editions, I was like, well, where's his friend? Yeah, where's his friend that he later? I need that scene.
I almost want to rewatch the scene. I saw it recently at the Seltzer Coast Film Society presentation of the movie, and Dave Drace kind of has when he's like, "Are you sure you can fly this?" And Biggs is like, "Oh, this is the best bush pilot everywhere." And it's almost like he's like, "Whatever."
Yeah. All right, just
we're gonna die anyways. Good luck to you, kid.
Just find a helmet and just get going, I guess.
See you in the afterlife. It's one of those things that I know some folks who clamor for the original versions is fine, but I have some people who I've been around and just like, won't watch the special editions. Big fan of Star Wars, won't watch them, and totally where I respect that, I'm like, but then you miss, these are the moments and the characters and the added wrinkles that you miss, and I don't know if I would want to see the original. I want to see the original version. I own them on VHS, by the way, but a lot of people do. But like, I would miss it. I would miss this scene.
Yeah, definitely. Those any time that you can get a nugget more of character building in this world, like give it to me, give it all to me.
And that doesn't go out to the, it's not like, it doesn't take you out to left field and then brings you back in. Like it flows enough to where I know a lot of deleted scenes are deleted for a reason. And most of it seems to be pacing of the story in movies, but this one, it sticks around enough and sticks around in the world where it flows. So that's why it's my number five. Biggs Dark Ladder. And I put an exclamation on that on my list. And you did this. You put an exclamation on this one as well. Oh, you're number four. Let's
hear it. I know you're not a huge fan of the Legends.
That's true.
But, you know, it's kind of weird, the psychology of a 10-year-old's brain. Because I knew that there were Star Wars books out there. Like, right. I was well aware. But for some reason, Shadows of the Empire, you know, when I'm 10, I'm like, oh, that's a real Star Wars thing. The other ones,
I think that's fair. I think it was positioned as that.
Yeah. I mean, it was like you had video games and soundtracks and toys. Like I was like, oh, it's real Star Wars.
Yeah,
I had the junior novelization of the novelization of Shadows of the Empire. Wow. So this was one that I didn't catch right away. This was one that like you find out down the road. But I was like, wait a second, are you telling me that when they get to Mos Eisley and there's a ship on the screen, pause my blurry little VHS that's shaking back and forth like we're in an earthquake because the tracking is terrible. Are you telling me that is Dash Rendar's Outrider? Are you telling me that Dash Rendar is real and he's in this movie? It's all real. It's like finding out that like Santa Claus is real. You know, it's like a Galaxy Quest where like, it's all real.
It's all
like,
real.
It's right there. Dash Rendar. You can wipe that thing all the way off the canon, but Dash Rendar lives and the Outrider is in A New Hope. And I loved Dash Rendar. He was like one of my favorite characters, which I never saw him on the screen, but just seeing like even the nugget, like he's there. And that means that someday, some way, maybe there's an adventure to be told. Maybe we can find out where he went, where he was going, how he got hooked up with them, but he exists. And I just love that even though like all that stuff got moved to Legends, like Dash Rendar still there. The Outrider's there.
Look, the ship is there and the model comes back again in Rebels, but Jason Fry really cements it last year or so with one of the books leading up to Solo, which had Dash's name in there. So that's for any doubter that goes, that's just the ship. No, we can say it is now. And you know what? I'm not a huge fan of Dash. Again, a little bit, it's not even age, generation. It's just like, I wasn't as plugged into it. I played the game and it worked for me as a game, but I didn't go beyond that. But that's just me. That's my journey. This is your journey. But I do love the little wrinkle that the ship's there, much like I love the Falcon and Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
Because it opens up, and this is why I love the idea of Disney Plus shows or what can we do, and why I love this time period around every corner there could be a little story to tell. And Mandalorian, we're going to get that. And who knows? Dash may show up in Mandalorian. If there's any spot for him, the Mandalorian little background spot.
I mean, if
maybe Bill Burr is Dash Rendar.
If you've ever wanted to actually watch me as a 33-year-old man vomit in excitement, it would be just put Dash Rendar in The Mandalorian. It was one of those things where, like, that was one of the, like, you know, in the first crop of Star Wars toys that had.
Yeah, that was in that line, in the Power of the Force 2 line.
Right. When you're at that point, I was in fifth grade, sixth grade, and it's like, you have to read 4 books a quarter. And it's like, well, I'm going to read Shadows of the Empire, and I'm going to make my little diorama book project with my little Dash Rendar and my Shizor. And guess what? He's actually in the movie, so it all counts. Yeah. Again, it's like the weird logic of a 10-year-old that's like, oh, this is real Star Wars. But
and you know. George's relationship with Legends all through the time, even when the Legends were rolling out new in front of us, has always been a little weird. Like, he didn't really acknowledge it. He totally was like, there's a bunch of books, but they're not just my movies.
Yeah.
But him and his team, and a lot of the team worked on special editions, I think, you know, McCallum and everyone, they start making their way to the prequels too. But it also speaks to them going, hey, we love this too, and let's put this in, have fun. And George, you know, obviously slid some stuff into the prequels, Quinlan Vos, the 501st from the charity organization, everything. Like, he was aware when something came across that he liked, he had fun with it. And so I think it speaks to that too. But even back in 97, or when did it come later? I'm trying to think, was it straight in 97 or one of the later?
It's one of those, it must have been, because I feel like I paused it on a VHS.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
And we'll look that up. And to clarify too, for this list, special editions, we are talking not just the theatrical release 97 versions, but there's so many different versions. I don't remember which one's the DVD, which one's the Blu-ray, which one's super VHS tape. I don't know. We're talking about all of them. George still loves the tinker. So, but anyways, it's a powerful testament to people at Star Wars going, let's have some fun.
There's something also just like, I don't know, gratifying or just kind of justified, where you're just like, yes, this thing that I invested in, it like matters and means something. So that was really cool for me.
Who knows? I'm going to predict Bill Burr's Dash Rendar now. No, I'm backing off that. My number four is Cloud City, Mos Eisley, and the locations that feel bigger and better. This one comes up a lot on a lot of lists. Cloud City is one of the more positive changes. The Cantina, there's some changes in it. I don't like it. Some of it I'm actually fine with, but some of the favorite little monsters and everything. But, you know, George wanted to tinker with a cantina because he was always disappointed. And you hear Mark Hamill, there's the Shadows of the, not Shadows of the Empire, Empire of Dreams. They got that in my head. The Empire of Dreams, Doc, I was just watching again because it's on Amazon Prime now. And Hamill talks about, he's like, we read the script and I'm paraphrasing, but just like, wow, it was so cool when we got there. We're like, what is this? Like, there's an alien in there. There's like a werewolf. Like, what? So I understand him tweaking that, but I'm talking about Cloud City, Mos Eisley, and we're going to talk a little bit, some stuff added later, but things that we knew and love kind of felt bigger. And when they drive in to take away some of the comedy of the Jawa falling off the Ronto and all that stuff, I'm okay with that. But even the, you know, the Banthas and hearing them moving kind of with them, with Jabba going to the second sail barge to the Sarlacc pit and just going into Mos Eisley back in A New Hope. And then definitely Cloud City, which just looks so much, so much better. I just love that George was like, now that I can, this is why I wanted to do this. I was shooting with no budget and then most, still trying to struggle with money, even if it was my own by 1883. Alan Ladd Jr. leaves after budget problems and kind of everyone's upset at him and the deal that went wrong, and all the stuff, great story stuff there. So I like that George was like, no, this is why I wanted to do this. I get to go back and fix things and make it bigger.
Yeah, I mean, like, I remember when those special edition VHS came out.
Yeah.
Before the movie would start, they would give you like a little 5-minute featurette that would tell you, here's all like the changes that we made.
Right.
And really, for me, that was the only time that I actually knew what was being changed.
Yeah,
But yeah, seeing like opening up Cloud City, it didn't feel gratuitous. It feels very organic. Same with me. Like, I always think, you know, like I bought those, the DVD that had the special edition on one disc and then like the original on the second one. And when you watch A New Hope, it's like, man, when they're combing the desert, it's like two dudes.
Yeah.
And then, but you know, in this, there's like Dubacs, and it's like, oh no, they're really looking.
They're taking
like,
over.
And I feel like those enhancements, like, yes, sure. Sure, yeah. The size noodles, the your job is whatever. But when you're adding to the narrative, it's like, no, they're really looking. They didn't just send three guys down there to search a whole desert planet. Yeah. Like, those are the additions that I like.
And what I love about that, too, and I think you made me think of the Death Star, the Han chase sequence, they add more stuff in. I like that, too. But I, even, like, on Hoth, when the rebels are lining up there and they're waiting for the walkers, there's more turrets and of the little other gun, the little satellite guns, all those things. Like, it makes more sense. It just looks like, yeah, they're ready for war. It's not like two guns and the Norwegian ski team waiting. It's like we have a Rebel Alliance here ready to fight, and more stormtroopers in Tatooine on Mos Eisley. They added a couple there. Like, yeah. And you mentioned the Dubex. This is what I wanted to focus in on. It's not the best tech. Like, the CGI of it has not held up in that sequence. It's
sure.
It's clunky and everything. But I've never, I think I had more of a problem with it then. Going, oh, that seemed kind of weird. I'm 21 going, I liked it, but the Stormtrooper and the Dubex seemed like, you know, on a Commodore 64. They've done a little bit to work it out. But now that doesn't even hold me up because I'm exactly where you are. I'm like, yeah, it's a little garrison going down, a little search tape. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys always talk about, like, you know, your head canon, your emotional canon. It's like, I can disregard some of the, like, yeah, that's 1997 or 2000 totally. CGI. If it keeps me invested in what's happening on screen.
Right. Yeah. And that's one of the things I love. I don't think, again, I don't know if I watch the originals and when they go into Mos Eisley, I think, I like the special edition version. I even like the wider kind of the shot of Obi-Wan's hut.
Yeah.
And everything, just little tiny things, pulling out a little farther on the sand crawler, with the Jawas. Like, George was able to just to make it a little bit bigger galaxy and didn't have the limitations. So that's why it's my number four, which means we're up to your number three.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So this is what we were talking about. We're cheating a little bit. We're including some of the later stuff, but right. I think this was first introduced maybe with the DVDs. I don't remember,
yeah,
but
it could be.
I really do, and this is where some fans. I hear you. If you don't like this, I get it. I hear you. I'm with you. This works for me. Yeah. Tying in some of the prequel stuff.
Yeah,
I think. My biggest favorite ones are adding Naboo to the end montage. Mm-hmm. Actually, that end montage, just by the way, in general, I know a lot of people were upset that the Ewok song is gone. Sorry, 100% would... I never liked that when I saw the original. Mm-hmm. Like, no. This doesn't feel weighty.
That's so interesting, that perspective again.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, I love the Yub-Dub celebration. I really do, but... I think, and we've talked about a lot of Force Center, but I think I'd go towards what we have now over Yub-Nub.
Yeah, I think
Yub-Nub will always exist. I have the CDs. I can listen to it. I have the VHSs. I can watch it, but it just is more, a little more epic.
Yeah, it just doesn't, like when I finally saw it, I was like, oh, like it just doesn't emotionally hit the same for me as like this beautiful, like kind of melancholy but celebratory music that John Williams wrote, you know?
Well, because with the original, again, George is limited. George is limited by the time and the team. Beautiful. It works. It's still beautiful. It's still there. You still have the moment with Luke and Vernon Vader and everything. And you still have Lando clapping. But you have fireworks, not unlike the ones I'd see at Disneyland. Real life Earth fireworks, you know? Fly by a little bit, some Ewoks start dancing, and it is a great song. I would love to do it at karaoke, but I gotta imagine George for years looking at and going, but this is the story of victory in the galaxy. It wasn't just a victory on Endor. It right. just would make sense to me that he'd want to do this.
Yeah, and so when you finally get the chance to, like, I love maybe in my top five favorite visual moments of Star Wars is the image of that statue just crumbling on Coruscant.
Yeah.
And adding in Naboo at the end where it's just like, I've been on this journey since episode one. I know it's strange because episode one comes years later, but if you're watching this in the way that George wants you to, it's like, I've been on this journey for so long. And it just reminds you, like, remember where we started? Remember where the Empire was kind of quietly born and this one trade dispute on Naboo? They're free. We're all free. And I know, again, I get it.
No.
People hate it, but I love that it's Anakin Hayden Anakin.
Okay, let's. I have no passion towards defending Sebastian Shaw being in there.
Sure.
Other than I like that he's in there. He has great eyebrows, man. But if you've got, I hear you.
Here's what I have to say, because one of the common criticisms I hear of that is, well, how does Luke know who this young guy popping up is?
Right.
What I would say is, I have seen yearbook photos of my parents, and I'm not bewildered as to who is this person. If Luke is as strong in the Force as I think he is, I think he can put two and two together that most likely that is his father. And honestly, the last time, and this is where it's like, you know, the Clone Wars and all this fights, and like, Anakin was our hero.
Yeah.
I want to see our hero restored to who he was.
Right.
I get it. It's not the most flattering take that Hayden gave. And he's even said in interviews, like, I knew that's what they were going to do. I wouldn't maybe look like a creeper.
Just
staring like, hello there. But I love the thought that it's like, this is who you wanted to know who your father was.
Yeah.
This is him. It's not that old guy. This was Anakin Skywalker.
That's a great, really beautiful point you just said, Billy, of Luke. Luke throws down his blade to save his father by sacrificing himself. It leads to the redemption. He has to burn him. His father's dying in front of him. And go read the Return of the Jedi novel for how beautiful that scene is, where Luke is crying on him and he's taking, feeling the salt of the tears and tasting the salt of the tears of Luke on him. It's a beautiful moment. To take that moment and it's kind of the Force telling Luke, you did it. You've done good, kid. And you get to see what you just said. You want to know what who your father was? You never got to know that person? Here's what he was. Here's who he is. That's powerful.
Yeah.
Powerful stuff.
I love it. I love it so much. And you know, it, again, like I said with the Naboo thing, like it makes me feel when watching all of them that I've been on this journey. And it's the story of Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah.
And to see it come full circle, that promise fulfilled, that Qui-Gon was the one outlier that's like, yeah, I know this is what's going to happen. Like, that's amazing stuff.
Yeah. It's not like, with putting in Hayden, it's not like Kit Fisto's there. Yeah. Huh? This is not, who's that?
This is not Yaddle showing up. Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, Yoda found someone in the afterlife. Yeah, neat.
Yeah, that's good. So that's powerful stuff. The prequel tie-ins, totally agree. Any more to that point?
Yeah, look, there's other stuff too. Like, it always kind of bothered me, when you watch it all, you're like, who's that weird psoriasis looking emperor that just has like a big puffy eye, yeah, and doesn't sound quite right? And then, you know, I like that they went back and fixed it. And yeah, then, you know, within the novels and the comics, that moment even takes on more context, yeah, and you realize like Vader and the, yeah, Emperor, they are not simpatico. They, yeah, are not on the same wavelength. And it makes so much more sense, you know, like Vader has his agenda and the Emperor has his agenda and Luke has an agenda away from those two. So I love that. I it doesn't bother me. I kind of like that Boba's voice was dubbed, mm-hmm, over. I like it all to play together. I want all my, yeah, food on my plate mashed together.
Well, as do I. I want some food. Great stuff. And we're going to come back to the McDiarmid thing here because I think it's a great choice. But we're going to go to my number three now, which is I'm saying The Empire Strikes Door. And this is, of course, the title of the documentary by Force Center friend Jamie Stangroom. It's coming out. Actually, by the time this episode airs, like, it might be out on Jamie Stangroom's YouTube channel. Jamie's such a good guy, too, by the way, folks. If you need to support good people in Star Wars, Jamie is definitely one of them. Such a good pal to the show and to us. And that's his documentary, which is about the stormtrooper hitting his head, which was a long-held, and we talked about it at Force and Dementia recently, just a long-held thing that we didn't all pick up right away. Joseph and I both came to it a little bit later. I think a lot of people did when it was easier to pass around information. But I love that Lucas himself and his team leaned into it and said, oh yeah, this famous mistake, conk, you'll hear it. It's now in the movie. The stormtrooper hit his head and it inspired this entire thing. And now Jamie gets to do this documentary on who actually did it, because there's no real record of it. And it's become a thing, a little inside joke, a little that in the 90s, again, was this real shared, like, hey, do you know? Oh yeah, I do know. Now this was George's way of saying, I know too. And that's why I really love that moment.
It's so funny that you say, like, in the 90s, like, did you know? Do you know? Because I was definitely, you know, once we got these on VHS, yeah, you couldn't put anything else in the VCR. So my mom, and I've talked about my mom before, just always fostering my love of whatever thing I was into. She was.
And I met your mom at your wedding, we talked, yes, about this, and she was very happy. She was like, I made him the geek that he is.
And she's 100% right. Yeah. I mean, the poor woman had to watch these movies over and over and over, but the hitting the head on the door, yeah, that was kind of like our, did you see that?
Yeah.
Did you see that? And that became kind of our thing that, yeah, I'm sure we thought we discovered this,
oh, yeah, yeah,
this blooper, but that was just such like one of those things where it's like, at the end of the day, like, I love Star Wars. I do take Star Wars very seriously, probably, and sometimes more seriously than, mm, I should, but, yeah, there are some fun, silly little things in Star Wars. It just reminds you, like, oh yeah, like we're all just make believe. Yeah. It's all, you know,
it's all,
we're all just playing, you know?
Yeah. And a sub note to this is the open the blast doors, close the blast doors line kind of pops up. It's kind of in conjunction with this one too, with the stormtroopers now yelling, like, he's like, I'm gonna trap them, clope, crap, open the blast doors.
It's hilarious.
It's George having fun with it too, because George, you know, for every Greedo shoots first moment, George is protective and enjoys this franchise, at least on the most part.
I know we don't have this on our list, but real quick.
Yeah.
Greedo, the Han Greedo thing.
Yeah.
I might be the only person on the planet that's like, it's fine. Doesn't bother me.
This is your hot takes, man. I don't care now. I still disagree with it more than any. Jedi Rocks is my least favorite sequence, but it doesn't take away bigger themes or lore. It doesn't affect any of that stuff.
Sure.
I would argue with George on this one, other than what are you going to, you can't argue with the creator. But now I don't watch it now and grumble.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm over it.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm over it. And I think in Solo, they answered it beautifully.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm with you to a degree there. See, I love your hot takes. Your hot takes aren't always negative. Sometimes your hot takes are, hey, Trey, ever try liking something?
I just always, people are like, that's his character arc. He's a cold-blooded killer. And then he turns into this thing. I'm like, I don't think that's true, but yeah. Sure. If that supports it.
Well, I think George adjusts it to like a same time,
yeah.
You know, like
yeah,
I can live with that.
Yeah, I think that's more in line with Solo. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail the show.
No,
just
you're not derailing it.
That's usually when people think of special edition. It's Han shot first.
Han shot first, absolutely. So that's my number three, which means we're up to your number two.
Yeah, so again, this is one where I think I went overboard when you asked for my notes, because I literally tracked down photos of everything that I wanted to talk about, which was, oh my God, the merch.
Merchandise.
The merch strikes back.
Yeah.
And my poor mom, who had the hardest time saying no to me, it was everywhere. And the thing was too, it was like, you know, you have to remember, you know, I'm 10 years old. Mm-hmm. This is the era of the McFarlane, the Spawn, and Power Rangers.
Yep.
All the toy aisles were Power Rangers, or maybe, you know, some Brett the Hitman Hart or whatever. Like Star Wars, I remember a couple of those orange carded action figures here and there, but it was like one little teeny tiny section.
Yeah.
Nuh-uh. Special edition hits. All of a sudden, it's like the orange toys are everywhere. Then there's green action figures. Now we're expanding. So the toy aisle becomes massively Star Wars, but it's not just the toys. Mm. Every magazine cover, Life, Time, all these special like poster magazines, all Star Wars.
Yeah.
You go down all the cereal boxes, Star Wars. So imagine like coming into this movie, seeing it for the first time, coming out, and not only is there like 20 plus years of comics and books and all this other merch that's already out there, but it's like a new crop of merch. I had my Star Wars folders for back to school for sixth grade, my Star Wars backpack. I had Star Wars Velcro shoes. Going to Taco Bell. I think we ate Taco Bell every day for 4 months so I could get all the little kids' meals. There was like the Rubik's Cube and the Boba Fett with the huge freaking face so he could like levitate in the rock. Like it was just everywhere. And I think like, man, I can't, even when Force Awakens or the prequels came out, I don't even like, even episode one, I don't like.
Yeah,
I'm sure it was, but in my brain, nothing was Star Wars mania like that 1997.
I mean, 99, it was big. I mean, as someone who had all the Pepsi Company Phantom Menace cans, and someone who lived in the original generation, like but 97, 95, even when the Power of the Force comes back, but by the time special editions, like it's the modern era. Like that is the era where it's like, this is the new barometer for what it's like to have merchandise of Star Wars everywhere.
Yeah.
It surpassed, I think, not maybe the summer of 77, 78 and the early bird kits once they're all in the world. Like, trust me, the Sears catalog was my favorite thing to get and daydream over what to get. But yeah, I know what you mean. It wasn't just what you were experiencing as a 10 and 11 year old. Like it wasn't just that perspective. It was as a quote, older fan in his early 20s, looking around going, wow, it's okay to be a nerd again. Like, or actually for the first time.
Right.
Like, this is the thing. I'm in a screenwriting class and my teacher's talking about it. Like, this is amazing. And I think a lot of it, when you turn that Toys R Us in Santa Maria, California, if you're a local to I think it's still there. I think there's a Carl's Jr. There used to be a Circuit City. It's now like a Jones Fabrics. But there was a Toys R Us, and me and my friend Joel and my friend Gavin, we'd sneak over between classes, not sneak over, we'd classes, screenwriting classes, film production, we'd pop over and just, the wrestling toys. Me and Joel once fought over an Owen Hart classic WWF figure. I yanked it off the shelf first. Rest in peace, Owen. But yeah, it was like every time we went, it was like, what's there? What's there? What's there? And then you're right. It's everywhere. Taco Bell.
Yeah. That Taco Bell, I think I had to get two. There was one and it's like a cube and it's split down the middle. And there's if you look at it one way, it's a full Darth Vader helmet. Yeah. If you look at the other way, it's a full Yoda face. And as a 10-year-old, I just wasn't smart enough to figure it out. So I had to go back, get another kid's meal, get another one, and just tear that sucker apart. I was like, mirrors, why didn't I think of this? This genius.
What is this sorcery? So that is your number two, which means we're up to my number two. And we're kind of going back to something you were talking about at number three, and this is Ian McDiarmid Returns. Yeah, for a long time, and for many people in 1980, and even though I saw him such a weird order. Technically saw New Hope first at a drive-in, as I said before. Don't remember it, obviously, it was one. Saw Jedi, went and saw New Hope, or on VHS, or probably actually TV copy. I remember those commercial breaks. And then I saw Empire, right? So I was all over the map, but over time, it never mattered. I just was like, I saw them in order. I was so young. My brain was just molded to remember it that way. But yeah, we have an older female playing the Emperor, Clive Revel, or as I occasionally like to say, Clive Owen, but Clive Revel voicing him. And that was it until McDiarmid comes along in his mid-30s, kills the role, owns the role. As you can see, this year in 2019, we're all waiting for him to come back. And even if it's just his voice, roll it again. We love this guy. And by the way, he's great in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels as the butler. Welcome to hell. His return in this version is absolutely perhaps the best thing that's in the movie that's on the top of my list. Everything else after here is kind of bigger concepts. But this scene, you cannot go back in my head. I cannot watch the originals and not miss this scene more than any other scene. It works. It has added stuff, little wrinkles, and the tension, and it reads so much better and so much different than the original version. And like you said, now in modern canon, they have built, this is one of the moments I think in modern Star Wars canon they have built out from. I think they've gone to this and said, oh, what was at play here? Because George puts this in. How can we put this into a comic? How can we add Charles Soule's thing to goes into this? The original Vader comic in 2015 that went for a long time, that plays off this. And it all goes back to this, which is why I think it sinks so much and why we talk about the emotional canon here in Star Wars. When I hear a lot of people, sequel trilogy doesn't connect as much. Bull roar. It connects emotionally, and this is why. This is one of those sequences. It's a powerful thing, and why, as we're seeing again now, why would you want to not have Ian McDiarmid doing the Emperor? That's my monologue. That's my number two moment.
I have nothing to add. You took me to church, and here's my tithe. 10%, yeah.
10%.
Again, like I said, no one owns that role.
Yeah.
To me, like, you know, you talk about, like, you can't replace Luke. You can't replace Harrison. I'm like, you cannot replace Ian McDiarmid as the Emperor. He owns that role forever and ever and ever.
And I'm curious, you know, you throw in someone doing a younger Palpatine. I'm game for it. I'm game for it. But I will hold that person just to the same standard as everyone and myself holding Alden to Harrison. And I've said I have the hot take of I think he's better in Solo than Harrison in Return of the Jedi, and people can throw Ewok stones at me. I think he brought it so much in that, but I still hold him up to that. Especially New Hope and Empire, Han, I hold him up to that. So if everyone's dream of you know, Tom Hiddleston becoming young Palpatine in a Palpatine series, I'm all for that. But you better believe he better hit those things. And includes, you know, Whitwer does doing the voices, or the other people have done the Emperor's voices. They make it their own, but it still has to harken back to McDiarmid. And as we saw with Star Wars Rebels, you had Whitwer doing a great job.
Yeah.
Does a great job as Emperor. He's so good. They had a chance to get McDiarmid back. Bye, Sam.
Sorry.
And Sam would agree.
Yeah.
You know? So Ian McDiarmid returns. The Emperor and Vader have their moment. It's so good. It's juicy. So as we always do, we'll toss in a couple. Do you have any honorable mentions, things that aren't on your list there?
Yeah, I was hesitant to put this on the list because in my binge listening of Force Center, you have directly stated that this bothers you.
Okay.
And for me, I'm like, you know what? I kind of like it better.
Yeah.
I know. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I like the mouth coming out of the Sarlacc pit.
Oh, you like the Little Shop of Horrors, Sarlacc. Okay.
I think it was just because, you know, one, it will always be because that's what I saw first.
Yeah.
And two, it's because it just felt, I don't know, there just seems something when I watched the original and it's just this big hole with a bunch of teeth in it. I guess it was just like, how hard could it be to just use the teeth to just climb right out? But then when you, you know, like,
no,
what's so bad about this?
I've had those conversations as a kid. Yeah, absolutely.
But when you see the head, you're like, oh no, it's going into something. Yeah. You're donezo if you're in there. So I know it's a lot of people hate it. I'm so sorry. That's the
don't
one
apologize. Like, don't like apologize. I'll say this. Yeah. I still don't like the Feed Me Seymour version. However, seeing the creature, what it actually looks like now, which I don't know when the first time a cutaway book came out. I don't know. Over the last 10 years or so, it was like, oh, that's what a Sarlacc looks like beneath the sand dunes.
Right.
And it's almost like a little pudgy little cute pig. It's got little tentacles and it's got a gut. And then in at Galaxy's Edge, which I have not been to yet, but you have, but
yes.
in some of the comics and everything, Doc Ondor has one.
Yes.
And to see it in action, I the design works for me now as much. I still don't fully love it in the movie, but the young one, the little tiny one, I'm like, oh, that is, there's some symmetry to it. It looks good. And as someone who doesn't like the Rathtars, which is basically an old Sarlacc running around, I'm good with it there. So I can live with it.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
You're okay.
I appreciate you accepting.
What we do here. It's what we do here at Force Center. We accept. Any other ones that make the scene? I got one.
I would just say size noodles to troll you. So
yeah. No.
I think I've covered a lot about what I love about these.
The big one that I almost did is the Wampa sequence. I think a lot of people look to that. It's just a little added detail to it. And it plays well. It really flows well. Adds some tension of just the new shots to the Wampa. And making it, you know, again, Lucas had to work with what he had to work. And the Wampa terrified me as a kid, but just seeing more. And because I remember, you know, seeing it, going back to when I saw it in the theater in special edition time, I remember thinking like, oh, wow, that's a great idea. Like, you know, and over the years, it's been celebrated as one of the bigger things. So that almost would have made my list.
I like that addition. I think that's one of those scenes where I feel different types of like dread and tension for both versions, because there is something very terrifying about, like, you don't really know what's there, but you know it's really bad.
Yeah.
But then I also like, oh, that thing is like, that thing's here to play. Like, it's hungry, you know, and seeing the terror. So I like both of them.
I like it. It works together. You can have both. So with that, honorable mentions listed down there, we're going to go to my number one so the guests can close the show with theirs. My number one is this. It's a big concept. It ended the dark days of Star Wars. We talk a lot about, and you hear us old Star Wars fans, we talk about that era. I'll say roughly 86, 87 to 93. Is that dark days of Star Wars, which is only 6-7 years when you think about it. But wow, you know, it was a time where a lot of us from my generation, if you are in my generation, not so, if you were 15 when you saw New Hope, a little different. But if you were my age, saw Return of the Jedi at 7, Star Wars was everything. And then things started, Star Wars went away. It went away and it was still there. And it was that thing you kind of talked about with some friends, but nerddom wasn't celebrated. Nerd meant something different back then. And I discovered baseball. I discovered my future or not getting girls. I discovered all these things for me. That's my journey. Star Wars faded in the background, but also the media wasn't there. The material wasn't there. And Zahn's novel comes and Zahn's Heir to the Empire is the thing that really starts to turn around. The West End games, the card games are there too. Those have great value. But I really do think you talked about it with the toys. It brought your generation on. It reinvigorated my generation. And from that point on, though, that prequels brought their own things. We can talk about that in another show. And I think 06, 07, there was another kind of weird, not dark days, but, you know, not as bright with the prequels in the past. It's never been the same from 97 on. That is the point where I look at, and the Power of the Force figures in 95 coming back are key as well. But it was in the theaters. People talked about it. And now it wasn't just me going to my friends. Hey, we like Star Wars. Let's run some quotes and debate things. It was now I could look at your generation and talk about it as well. And now it just keeps building from there. It ended that period where Star Wars was in the background and brought it to the light. Right?
I feel like young Luke and Obi-Wan's like telling me about the before the dark times. Before
over a thousand generations, Star Wars fans watched Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to hear because for me, I guess like Star Wars didn't, it just wasn't on my radar, so I never thought about it. And then once it was on my radar, it never went away, you know?
Right. But that's, and again, and it's again to an age, but yeah, it just started that period. Because even after Revenge of the Sith, when a lot of us were like, okay, it's done, whether you hate them or not, or whatever, wherever you are in your prequel journey, it's done. But then, oh, this Clone War movie is coming in 2008. We didn't really like that. But oh, the series doesn't seem that bad. Oh, crap, Lucasfilm got sold to Disney. Like, the period of the downtime was there, but also the figures were there. Like, even in 06... You know, Joseph and I and Star Wars Rank, we're taking a little break right now with this episode and then one next week. But, you know, we've been going through all the figure lines, starting with the Power of the Force 2, moving our way up. And it's like still in 06 to like 09 are some of my favorite Star Wars figures. And I was buying them. So that was there. But yeah, it's interesting you say that you feel like, hey, it's all once I discovered it's always been there. And I look at it and go, yeah, once the special edition generation began, Star Wars has always been there.
Yeah.
It never went down. I still collect the baseball cards for a little bit. So that's why it's my number one. It ended the dark days of Star Wars. But we are up to your number one best thing about the Star Wars special editions.
I think, my number one kind of encapsulates everything that I feel about the special editions. And it's the fact that minus like a special event here or there, I think there was one a few years back where they did it. Right. This was really the last time that Star Wars in a big way was re-released in theaters. Right. This was the last time that you could go see these, you know, on the big screen. And it wasn't just like one night only. It was, you know, it was a regular theatrical engagement.
Right.
And for me, I'm going to try to get through this without getting emotional because it's
I want
we're talking about Star Wars.
I want you to cry on your first Force Center experience.
Yeah. Let's try not to do that, but I can't undersell how much my life changed President's Day weekend, 1997.
Right.
Like walking into a theater, not watching this at home like I watched Raiders of the Lost Ark or right. Back to the Future's movies that have shaped me, but not in the way that like getting to almost like in hindsight, it was like a time machine. Like the things that first generation's like, oh, you missed it. I got to see Star Wars in theater. It's like,
right.
I got it too,
you
know? And to me, it was just as real. It was just as valid. And to see Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back for the first time in my life in a theater, not Jedi, because I could not wait three more weeks to find out what happened to Han. I had to go get the
awesome.
I tried so hard
awesome.
To make it so that all three of them were my first time in the theater. But I was like, I'm
it's
not going to make it.
Long 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not going to make it. But
and then again, on March, nope.
Sorry. That was the first time that I realized, like, oh, there are changes here because I had already seen Jedi by that point. But
yeah.
You know, there was a day where, you know, like I said, with my mom, like she took me and it must have been a spring break or something. And she took me and we saw all three movies in the same day in the theater.
Wow.
We went to all three. And from there, like going to Star Wars with my mom wasn't just like, that was like our thing. That was a thing. Like my whole life became wrapped into this. It wasn't just the toys. It was like, it was everything around it, and it all started because these movies, I got to feel the magic, and it's so you can't capture lightning in a bottle, and somehow they did it twice.
I love that.
Yeah. It's I will forever, like, whatever they end up changing, whatever stupid Jabba CGI, whatever, nothing will ever take away my gratitude that the special editions existed and were shown in a theater. And I can't express how much that meant to me to experience those for the first time.
I cannot add to that, sir. Now I'm in your church. It's powerful. And you held your composure, but I can feel the emotions. And I love what you just said is everyone got to say, hey, I saw it in the theater back when I was your age type of thing. Well, I got to do it too. Wow, that's powerful. And you are not alone. And that is why Star Wars continued to grow from then and will always grow, because it's always someone's first time. And seeing it in the big screen, it means something. I being part of that Central Coast Film Society event in August, I got to go host the screening up there, and we watched it in a performing arts center. About 317 people came out, and like, even my girlfriend, it was her first time seeing A New Hope on the big screen. And it wasn't like a traditional movie theater, but it was up on a screen that was giant and large, and everyone got to cheer and clap and experience it. And there was a lot of people in the crowd that night in August of 2019 that just saw New Hope for the first time on the big screen. And to have that pass constantly through generations, and it goes back to the special editions. That's why when I run into some bitterness towards it, I will always let you have your bitterness. If you don't like Canto Bight and The Last Jedi, we're going to be friends. We're going to be okay. If you don't like the special editions because you think George made a mistake, that is fine. But the words that Billy Patterson just said here show me that my instincts are right on the mark. This is a great thing that they existed and they're in the theater and they're still here. And maybe one day you will get to see the version where, a sock puppet is yelling at Luke in a cantina. All right. Sounds good. Billy, thank you for sharing your list, man. That was great stuff.
Yeah, I love talking Star Wars. I love the special editions. I promise you, as a 10-year-old kid, you're not sitting there and be like, well, that CGI looks dumb. The magic hit you, and I felt the magic again, just reminiscing and talking about them.
Love it. There is magic in Star Wars. If you guys want to follow Billy and tell him how much you're glad he's here on Force Center, Billy, where can they do that? And also, anything cool coming up with Screen Junkies, let us know.
Yeah, well, at Billy A. Patterson on Twitter. And I had some unpopular opinions during this episode, but if you want more, I got a podcast, Hot Takes with Billy Business. You've been on there. We're talking Rogue One. And at LA Comic Con coming up here in October, I'm teaming up with the boys from the Nerd Goat podcast.
Okay.
We're doing a super special event. We're going to do a live show about, it's called Reboot It. And it's, if you had to reboot Batman, if you had to reboot a franchise, you don't get a say in it. You have to reboot it. How are you going to do it? So we're going to do our first episode live at LA Comic Con.
That is great. That's awesome, man. That'll be a lot of fun. Go follow Billy on Twitter. Billy Biz, man. Talk some Star Wars, talk some baseball, talk all things with Billy. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to KenNapsok.com for information on where to find my book, Why We Love Star Wars, including the audio version, which is out, or upcoming stand-up comedy gigs. I'm writing the baseball column on Flag Sports every Monday. Check that if you're a sports ball fan, though I hate that term, sports ball. It's just sports. Head on out and check that out. We want to talk about Force Center. If you have anything to add to this conversation, follow us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Like our Facebook page. Use the hashtag Star Wars Ranked or the hashtag Force Center, or both of them in conjunction. We can find it even that much more easier. We made the switch to Anchor recently, and we're very happy to do so. It was for great business reasons. Thank you for your support as the transition kind of happened over the course of a couple weeks. Appreciate your patience for that. You can get information on our show on forcecenterpod.podomatic.net, though that website should change soon. And also, don't forget, if you want to support us, go to patreon.com/forcecenter. We're building toward goals there. A lot of things going on. All right, that is the end of my business with Billy Business. We have talked about the special editions, and Star Wars has been ranked.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.